This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live, and today with another wonderful guest, somebody you should all know, and I am going to go right to Jonathan Poretz and ask him to, he's a singer in San Francisco, and the background to that and the genre that he covers is a little bit original?
Well, actually, it was original a long time ago. It was the Great American Songbook. So.
But the combination.
It's the combination of what I bring to it and kind of make that my own.
But you said you were where Sinatra and Mel Torme talk about that.
When I talk about my style of music,
I would say it's
if Sinatra and Torme were somehow molded together, the swing
of
Sinatra.
Did you grow up with them both?
I sure
popular?
Did.
Popular? I mean, that, okay.
Well,
Mel Torme was a long time ago. So was Sinatra.
Well, we're going to get into why Mel Torme became so important to me.
Okay.
And they're both my parents. Sinatra on my mother's side and Mel Torme on my father's side.
Okay, talk about that then and how you grew up and where you went to school, because you said you're from...
I'm from Bayside, Queens, and most people don't know about Bayside, Queens, except now they may know about it because of the Wolf of Wall Street. Jordan Belfort is from Bayside, Queens, or at least lived
and
there.
And so is Fran Drescher.
And so, little... is she from Bayside, too?
Oh,
she's from Queens.
Queens.
I went to Queens College, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you said.
But Bayside's had a few celebrities, and and I guess I had to leave Bayside to become sort of a local celebrity anyway, at least in San Francisco.
Did you sing there, though?
I sang. It's interesting because I didn't always start out with Sinatra and the jazz and all of that. I was a typical teenager growing up in the 60s, and so was the Beatles. I listened to the Beatles and Chicago and all those.
And did that make you want to sing?
I did. So I was doing – well, I've been singing since I was – three.
That's what I want to know. So when did you first meet a microphone and knew you liked it?
The first time I performed with a microphone was I was 4 or 5. And my cousin, Holly, in Queens, was in a dance recital and doing the twist. Didn't seem too complicated, but they needed somebody to sing the twist.
So you sang that Chubby Checkers?
I put on the orange Chubby Checker shirt and I danced. I sang while she danced around me. And it was a lot of fun, and then I didn't want to do it. I had to be coerced.
Oh, really?
By my parents.
Uh-huh.
I was shy, and so I was a little nervous. But they coerced me.
So what, how did they succeed in coercing you?
Well, they got my brother and I gifts, fun stuff, and my brother got his right away. This is going to sound terrible. My parents were just
I don't think it's going to sound terrible. What I think it is going to sound like is that they found a way to let something blossom in you. That needed blossoming.
They must have known.
Yeah.
Because I got my toy after the performance.
Right, I realize you're going to say that.
But after the performance, I did find that, wow, you sing and people like it, and that attention is a nice thing.
And the attention is nice, and what about making people happy, that part of it? Could you tell what the audience was?
You know, I don't remember it that much, but I do probably remember more... singing from my parents and my grandparents.
Oh, really? Start with your grandparents, would you?
Well, I've got, let's see, they're gone a long time now.
Sure.
But I had a wonderful, some really interesting grandparents. And my grandmother and grandfather both came from, today would be Lithuania. So their English wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandmother had a beautiful singing voice. And so...
Did they speak Yiddish?
They spoke mostly
home?
Yiddish.
Uh-huh.
And I got to, you know, she could say, we communicated, was usually eat a lot. She made great food, and I missed that terribly. But I used to sing for her all the time. When they'd come over, my brother and I would do, believe it or not, Al Jolson impressions, because that's the music my father was playing around the house.
Yeah.
Early 60s.
Sure.
I don't know why. He wasn't around at that point. But we would do our great Al Jolson impressions at you know, age 2, 3, and 4, because that's what we saw my dad do. The only caveat was, in order for us to sing for them, they had to close their eyes.
Why?
Because we didn't want them to see us. Yet we could see them smiling even with their eyes closed. And eventually we
got was that part of the shyness?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't know who got that first. I think my brother and I teamed up and said, close your eyes and we'll sing.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's how that happened. But once I caught the bug, I didn't really stop, and I sang in school choir, and then I had my first band at age 13.
Good for you. And you play, or you're straight vocals, or you play something also?
I would not consider myself a guitarist, but I play guitar. And when I was younger, I front the band, I would sing and play guitar, and it was always a lot of fun.
So I have a question, if we can just take a detour.
Yeah.
And that is, you said your father was playing Al Jolson,
mm-hmm.
but that was probably the music of his teen years, was it not?
Well, probably, yeah.
And you are attached to Mel Torme and Frank Sinatra. So I'm thinking that, you know, we tend to go back, we are so, it's so on our hard drive, the music that we heard when we were about that age.
Right. And it's really interesting with me. Now, what my dad was
probably... I could lip-sync every song from the 50s, I'm telling you.
Oh, that's great.
You probably could, too. But, I mean, just because it's in there.
It is in there.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, too, when you think, and we're not going to get into... But when people who actually have Alzheimer's, for instance...
Oh, I know that,
but
yes.
One thing they never forget, and right. I've done performances right. For Alzheimer's patients, and the one thing I noticed that they would... know all the lyrics. Mm-hmm. They might not remember what they had for mm-hmm. breakfast or lunch or who their
yes.
children are, but they remember the lyrics.
Yes.
And somehow music is a wonderful
well,
stimulant.
Do you remember the scene in, I don't know if you saw this movie,
Awakening?
But uh-huh.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
So they played the big band era music for those. Mm-hmm. And I went into a total panic and I said to my husband, here's what you play if I go into a coma. Don't be playing that or I'll never come out. And I actually gave him a playlist.
Interesting.
I did.
Well, that makes sense.
I think as long as you're doing your will, mm-hmm. you ought to slip that one in.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That is an awesome idea.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
I never thought of it.
It just gave me a whole idea for a whole series of CDs.
Good.
CDs to remember by.
Yes.
I like that.
Generation by generation,
yeah.
or decade by decade, because it kind of... Oh, I hope you do that. Okay, back to you.
Back to me.
Yes.
So I actually was listening to, early on, you know, the Beatles were a huge influence, and I wasn't really much on the Elvis train, but I did listen to Glenn Campbell.
But what about looking back at Elvis now?
Well, looking back, I actually never really got, you know, I appreciated him, but I was never much of an Elvis fan. I don't know why. I guess we didn't play it around the house much. The Beatles I got my parents into, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed singing, you know, pop music. But I was a little different than most of the other kids. I probably was listening to Glenn Campbell when other kids weren't.
Now, what drew you to Glenn Campbell?
Well, believe it or not, it was his TV show, and I saw him. That, remember the old Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour?
Mm-hmm.
He had replaced I think it was the Smothers Brothers.
Oh,
and that
yes.
was the first time we saw him.
You keep
him.
Going back, and finally it's replaced Spade Cooley.
Yeah,
yes.
right,
okay.
exactly.
So, go ahead. And you were, I'm going to know about in college what you were.
Well, it's interesting. I in college...
And I'm asking that only because you mentioned it before and it sounded interesting.
I took a couple of theater courses and I really wasn't doing much singing. I had done theater in high school and then I must have taken a little break because I didn't do too much singing. I was sort of doing party bands and mm-hmm. things like that, but it really wasn't my goal. When I got out of an engagement... At age 21,
mm-hmm.
suddenly it was an opportunity to kind of get back into singing. And I joined, the guys that were in that party band had moved on and created an original rock band. At the time, actually more fusion than rock, sort of jazz fusion. We're talking 1979. So whatever was popular then. And that was a lot of fun. 4 years with those guys.
That's great.
We eventually called ourselves the Newts. That's a whole story in itself.
N-E-W-T-S, like baby lizards? N-E-W-T-S,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And we played the New York circuit, and we just were bad timing. We were around and had some great music, but no one was signing anybody back then. And this was in a time when record companies were still signing acts and actually paying to have their records done. Today, you make your own record.
Exactly, isn't that
and,
nice?
And you hope that they'll take it and market it for you.
Right. Nope. Talk about your parents. You talked about your grandparents and parents, and you said your mother was the Frank Sinatra and your father was the Mel Torme.
Well,
can
my
we
dad,
add a whole story there?
We can, and when my dad hears that, he's going to say, what do you mean I was one of the first Franks? He would say, back when I was a young man, you know, it was Bing Crosby. All the guys love Bing Crosby, and all the women love Frank Sinatra.
Oh,
but my father,
a little gender confusion, because I really always liked Bing Crosby.
Well, there you go.
He's got such a smooth little swing to him, but go ahead.
And... he was rare in Brooklyn, New York, where he was, he's from Brighton Beach. He was one of the few guys that actually liked Sinatra, really appreciated mm-hmm. him. So he really was a Frank Sinatra fan. But when I think of Sinatra in my household, I think of my mom, because she had the 78s, and she'd play them all the time. It wasn't really sinking in for me.
So it wasn't their personalities. It was what they were drawn to.
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah. And they were both. My dad sang in the New Old City High School Choir. So he could sing, and my mother had a very sweet voice, mm-hmm. too. She just didn't use it very often. But they both were very musical, and they appreciated music. And we had music all the time playing in the house, and I was very lucky that they took my brother and I to concerts, mm-hmm. jazz concerts. Mm-hmm. So we had a very interesting education.
So at what point did you come to San Francisco?
Oh, that's been recent. When I say recent, 19 years, but, you know, mm-hmm. that's fairly recent. Most of my youth and adulthood was spent in New York. Mm-hmm. I moved out when I was 39. So San Francisco, because I'm not just a musician, I also have a day job. Mm-hmm. I'm in public relations.
And is that what brought you out here?
And that's what brought me out to San Francisco. It was an opportunity to, right as the tech bubble was starting, mm-hmm. I moved out to be where the clients were. Mm-hmm. And don't regret leaving New York, although I love New York. Yeah. San Francisco is a wonderful city.
What kind of clients do you like working for?
Well, they're mostly tech. When I first moved out, but now that I'm in a company, I'll give them a plug, Double Forte.
Sure.
We do some consumer products, like Cliff Bar is one of our clients.
Uh-huh.
And I've become sort of the creative guru of the agency, which is kind of
nice.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're with an actual
PR uh-huh. agency. Yeah. So unless I'm doing PR for myself, which if you're an attorney, they say don't be your own PR person. Although that's how you and I met.
Yes. Well, you were attracted to the love letters aspect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about that too. Go ahead.
Well, do you want me to talk about that now? Because
no. You keep going on the flow you're going on.
Oh, okay. So I moved out here, and that was it was really interesting. And this kind of gets me back to the love letter I want to talk about, which we originally talked, is about my dad.
Yeah. Oh, because I need you to say, I guess you will. Go ahead.
Well, my mom gets a little bit of a love letter, too. And the reason is when I moved out to the Bay Area, and I live in Marin, in 1995, mm-hmm. I moved out in January, a very hard decision to leave my family.
Oh,
I was very,
yes.
very, very close with my mother. Yeah. And but I thought that was a good opportunity. And in my mind, I'm thinking I'll eventually move them out. At the time, mm-hmm. I had no children, and I thought, when the kids come, they'll move. Sadly, my mom got sick in September of 1995, unaware that we were going to have a baby. And so my first child, Olivia, was born 6 months after my mother passed.
Oh,
so
she didn't realize she was gone.
She's gone. Oh. She never got to meet my daughter or daughters mm-hmm. now. But her passing was an eye-opener, and it made me realize how short life is.
Yes, and getting shorter.
And getting shorter. But what I think happened is I had given up music, and for lots of different reasons. I really wasn't performing for quite some time. But when she died, and I was commuting into the city, I saw a sign. This was about 5 months after she passed,
mm-hmm.
I saw a sign for auditions in San Anselmo for Guys and Dolls.
One of my favorites.
Something I had done when I was in high school.
And the part was what, Nathan Detroit?
Well, here's the thing. We had just had a baby, and let me also preface that this was my former wife, mm-hmm. so I'm newly married. But my mother's, my kid's mom and I, she just had the baby, and I was just thinking, you know what, I'd love to do this audition, and I would only do the show if I could get Skye Masterson, because I played that in high school.
I was going to say, I said Nathan Detroit, looking at you, you're a better Skye Masterson. Yes.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Although Marlon Brando as Skye Masterson, who
wasn't he?
Go figure.
Yeah.
But I did get the part, and that was sort of the resurrection of my performing career. And
good.
I did local theater for several years, and then I got back into singing with a microphone in mm-hmm. my hand. And once I did that, I wasn't going to not do that. And I've been doing that ever since. And I've been actually very lucky. At the time that I recording my first and right now only CD, I got one of the drummers on the CD had said he was playing in a show that was here in San Francisco called The Rat Pack Is Back.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, they're looking for some local Franks because they're going to extend the run. And I think you'd be really good for that. And I said, you know, I don't think so. I don't sound like him. And actually, I'm trying not to sound like him. I'm trying to develop my own style.
Sound like you, yeah.
But he said, well, I really think you should go to the audition. And I went to the audition. And I got the part. I got cast as Frank Sinatra in The Rat Pack Is Back. And that opened up so many doors. So
when you are playing a part like that, do you take on his, feel or his style? Do you kind of tend to do his voice or you don't have to?
Well, it's really interesting. My voice is not like his.
No, I see that.
But and I remember talking to the producer. This was actually, the producer was Buddy Hackett's son, Sandy Hackett, who played Joey Bishop in the show. And I said to Sandy, I said, you know, I can do the mannerisms and I could learn all the movements and I could learn his phrasing, but I don't really sound like Frank. He said, you know, the audience wants to hear Frank Sinatra. And if you put out little dots and let them connect the dots. And after the show, they'd come back to me and say, my God, you sounded just like Frank Sinatra.
Because mannerisms carry.
They do.
Yes. They carry the person so often.
And when you have the lights of the show and you're dressed in the tuxedo and you've got the blue contacts on, even though my eyes are so bright. I'm a method actor.
I was going to ask you that. No, did you actually use blue
contacts? I did blue contacts.
Oh, I was going to ask what you did about that definite difference.
Even with my blue contacts on, my eyes were still brown.
Yeah.
But when people would come to greet us afterwards, they'd say, hey, where are your blue eyes? And I had to look up into the light and then they'd see the blue eyes and they would be happy.
Yeah.
You know, they say, oh, they checked that off. Okay. Very good. You can be Frank then.
What was your mother's name?
Florence.
Florence. And your father's name?
Is Art. Arthur. Arthur Poritz and Florence Poritz.
Okay. The reason I kind of wanted to talk about that because I know that your father was very influential in your musical life.
Absolutely.
You had said that.
And the reason why I actually contacted you was I'm doing a show coming up on his actual birthday, which coincides with the first day of summer.
Okay, so do you do that every year? Do you do that every year on his birthday?
We try to do some sort of a show.
Okay.
We try to acknowledge, you know, the reason is because my brother comes into town for his birthday.
That's so nice.
So I always try to play somewhere so that my brother could come up with me.
So it's a way of bringing your family back together.
Absolutely.
Again, even though you're far away.
Absolutely.
But the thing I was so touched about, I mean, it's a little, is given how influential your father has been in your musical life, in your heart and soul, I can see, and how much you love each other, that the title of your show is The Art of My Music. Is that right? Or
Title, that's close. And this is different from any show I've ever done for my dad.
That just took my heart away.
It's called Songs from My Father.
Oh, but what was
The Art of My Music.
Oh, I see.
It's a long title.
The whole thing.
Yeah. Songs from My Father, The Art of My Music.
Oh, The Art of My Music. That's just so gorgeous.
And the show...
You're a good PR person.
Is going to be comprised of songs that either I heard as a result of him playing when I was a kid, songs that he's always loved that I did, songs that I don't do because I have to learn a few songs that I know that he loves, and I don't want to give any surprises away to him, but I might have a few.
Okay.
And so these are all songs that resonate, including...
That's kind of an ongoing relationship with him,
absolutely.
That you're learning more songs for him.
Sure.
Okay, so go ahead.
And songs that were that my mother loved, that my father, you know, their song, for instance, their song was You're Getting to Be a Habit with Me.
Oh, nice.
So a lot of songs I already do, but I'm going to package them together.
I wonder if young people have an Our Song anymore.
I think so. I know my wife and I, my wife Bobby, our song, I guess, would have to be At Last. Because that's the first song she heard me sing on our second date.
Now, you sang it to her, or she happened to be where you were singing?
Well, we were on a date, and I went to a place where they had jazz, and I knew the musicians, and they asked me to come up and sing a song. So
nice.
I sang it, and she liked it.
Good.
She married me, so I must have done it right.
How long have you been married?
We got married December 21, 2012, so it was a year.
Oh.
We decided to get married on the day that the world was supposed to end. We figured, well, we'll go down happy.
Yes. Nice. It's either a nice start or a nice end.
And it was a wonderful start.
Oh, good. Yeah. And you have daughters, you say?
I have two daughters. Olivia Florence is her middle name.
Nice.
And she was missed my mom, unfortunately, but yeah. We named her after my mother as far as the middle name. And she, what do you know? She looks just like my mom.
I was going to ask. Sometimes that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, she really does. And my other daughter is wonderful. Her name is Alexandra Rose. Mm-hmm. And they're both teenagers. But one is graduating high school. So
oh, wow.
Very soon. So that's exciting.
Nice. So let's talk about love letters for a minute because I'm listening to you. And I already have four people in your life that I'd like to write love letters to. So when you think about love letters, what's your immediate thought? Because I'm going to say, who gets your love letter today? And what would you say?
Wow. Well, I'm going to say this, that Bobby gets my love letter every day.
Now,
so I'm going to.
Do you actually write her notes? Does she have things in your handwriting?
They're verbal love letters.
Okay. Let's hold your horses.
Okay.
Because
we're going to write a letter. We're actually going to write a love letter.
There's something about seeing a letter come to you in the mail.
Yeah.
Or left on the pillow, your handwriting.
Yeah.
She'll be able to touch something that has felt the touch of your hand forever. If you're away doing a show, if you're not there, if for anything, and your children will find those someday and see what a lovely legacy of love they have behind them and get to have something that felt the touch of your hand.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Well, we just celebrated her birthday on the 19th of February. So she had several love letters from me. And I know that she's going to hold on to those.
Oh, good. Oh, so she actually does.
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
So I've written some. Well, I thought you were talking about it like right now, but certainly she, in cards, we communicate.
But if you say more in the card than Hallmark has said, then that's certainly a love letter. Oh, sure. That's your stationery.
That's my in a way.
Okay. Oh, I didn't.
And I guess I've moved into the newer generation. So, but we don't do. And part of that is. I should have been a doctor.
Why?
Because my handwriting is atrocious.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Okay. Handwriting atrocious. People are a little hard in their own handwriting.
Yeah.
And how they look in photos and their own voice.
Mm-hmm.
Handwriting, it doesn't matter how atrocious it is. It's yours.
Yes.
And nobody else has it.
But what if they can't read it?
Well, interesting point. I got actually a letter from somebody recently, was a doctor. And I mean, is a doctor. And his handwriting is atrocious.
Yeah.
And clever man, he typed the same message and stapled it together.
Oh, there you go.
So I got the joy of having something that he actually wrote.
Right.
His handwriting wasn't atrocious, but it was difficult.
Yeah.
And isn't that smart?
Very smart.
So you could write something and then just do a copy, print out a copy for posterity.
Yes.
Because you're going to be part of some kind of musical history.
Hopefully.
Why not leave a trail?
Yes.
Okay, so who else would you write to?
Well, I would write, especially because of the way this segment came about, my love letter would be to my dad.
What would you tell him?
I would tell my dad what an inspiration he's been, what an important role model he's been for me.
And you know what I think? I'm doing this because, you know, in love letters workshops, I really stress this because I think it's important. What people really want to know, all of us, is that you paid attention to the specifics, that you remember certain things. So when you say to him, you were such a role model, will you then just say you did this and that and the other and be real specific?
Well, we talk about one of the most important things that I remember. And if I don't bring it up to him, he'll remind me.
Okay.
Was how active and involved he was in my childhood. And he always uses as an example, if you needed anything at the library for school, I would drop what I was doing and I would go to the New York Public Library and I would go get what you needed because we were in Bayside.
And how nice to put that down in your own handwriting.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So he would do stuff like that. And I like to think that I'm as involved in my own children's lives and I get that. I believe from not just my dad, but my mom as well. But my father was very, very involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful relationship. And so the other thing I remember, and I love to tell him about, and, you know, that now he's a little older, we don't obviously get to do that. But my father was an explorer.
Oh.
But we explored local places. But every weekend, even when I was into my 20s, there was nothing I loved more than going with my mom and dad. My dad would create these journeys.
Like field trips?
They were day-long field trips that he would research. Now, this was before the internet. So he'd pull out the maps, and he was an avid reader, still is, the New York Times, and he would map out a route.
So what were some of the places that you would go?
Oh, we would go into places in Connecticut, and I don't even remember the little cities.
Oh, like day trips, real broad. These were day trips. Not just local stores or restaurants.
Oh, no. These were, you know, we'd get out and, you know, or could just be going up to, I think it was Maskers or something like that, where we'd pick apples as a family. That was fun. But he would find a little destination. It would always have to be one place that we'd go. Mm-hmm. And it might be to a restaurant that he found, mm-hmm. or it might be an interesting train museum.
Oh, I think this is just all delicious to just write all this down and send it. Maybe, I mean, it doesn't take too long because it's right there in your head and your heart.
I've got a lot of those memories.
In just even once every 2 months, just to jot down, and I remember this, and send it. I can't tell you what this does for people.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
And he will keep those, and, oh, yes, and they'll go in a treasure box, and they'll go down for generations.
Yes.
I'm thinking also, you can't mail a letter to your mother, but that doesn't mean you can't write to her.
I talk to her every day.
Oh, do you?
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
okay. So what if you wrote to her? I'm big on this. For some reason, I like it. What if you wrote to her? Did you call her Mom?
Yeah.
Okay. Dear Mom, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to my daughters.
Mm.
And then just talk about her to her, and then your daughters and will have more of her.
You know, that's probably one of the things that I wish I would do more of, which is to tell my daughters more stories about their grandmother.
If you do it in writing,
yeah,
it is.
Absolutely. I see that.
It is the gift that keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, I hope you'll do all of that.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
I know because, life is busy, but...
Well, you know, they want to know. And here's the love letter to my mom. I was probably the most fortunate person in the world because I can't imagine anyone having a better relationship with their mother than I did. She and I spoke every day when I became an adult. I worked my day job back then in New York. I worked at NBC mm-hmm. for 12 years. My mother worked two blocks away at what is called Viacom today. Back then it was called Viacom.
Uh-huh.
And I'd either go to her commissary or she'd come to my commissary.
So all this written down is just, you know, your own hand, family history documented in your own hand is gold.
Yeah.
Maybe after you're gone. And that's maybe a little hard to look at. You don't do it for that. But just knowing that you're leaving something behind you. Would you tell us your website, please?
Yeah, well, it's my name, which is Jonathan Poritz.
Let's spell that out.
Because slowly. No one ever gets it right, including me. JonathanPoritz.com.
Okay. And so worth looking into. And so people can find out where you're performing.
My whole schedule is on there, and videos are on there, and audio is on there, and photos are on there, and it's a lot. It doesn't get a lot of traffic. Maybe it'll get some more, but it's where people want to know. If they want to know what I'm doing, that's where they go.
Good. Okay. So we're going to keep an eye on what you're doing, and I hope to get to one of your performances than later.
Well, I don't know when this is going to air, but I would invite you right now on the air to a show that I'll be doing, and it's my love letter.
I'm gonna keep an eye on your website.
Yeah,
wonderful. And just for everything you do.
Very good.
So I'm gonna try to do that, and it's in San Francisco and Marin that you perform.
I perform all over. So the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley is coming
good.
Up.
Okay,
we'll be in Livermore later, and
you really are all around and busy. That's
wonderful. We'll be in Pleasanton, and I'm hoping to get back into San Francisco. But you know, the jazz venues, have dried up. So we're working on it.
Okay, good. I want to thank you for doing this with me.
Thank you so much.
To hear about a family such as yours is so joyful for me. Probably for you too.
It is. It's
but
really
it's,
great
it's
to,
wonderful.
To take a trip down my memory lane.
Yes. Right. And, you know, people talk so much about gratitude, and that's such a big concept, I think, for everybody today. The more disconnected we get with instant messaging and emails, which I'm addicted to, but still it's not the same.
Right.
And, you know, you're pile of mail is not what it used to be.
It's a whole different pile.
Yeah, that's right. It's a whole different pile, and it used to be a thinner pile, but all personal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know from the handwriting who's reaching out to you and a whole world. And we can bring that back to some degree.
You know, I think you're onto something.
I am. So thank you, dear. And I just want to say, in line with all that, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. And I hope that all of you will do more of it. Thank you. This is Janet Gallen and
Jonathan Porras
saying goodbye for now.